Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The new Star Wars movie released, and seemingly, most people I follow had tickets to see it. This is a wild pop cultural energy around Star Wars that sweeps everyone up into it. I think, like, even if you're not super into it, it's the new Star Wars, come on! The interesting thing I noticed was that many of the people coming back from The Last Jedi were serving up their immediate take on its quality. Some people simply expressed a feeling after seeing it, some ranked its spot in the trilogy right away, and I even saw some people scoring it down to decimal points. All of this just hours after seeing it. For the record, I think describing what you feel after watching something is appropriate. I feel that the importance to be out there sharing your thoughts on the internet at the same time as everyone else may have won out on the importance of letting things sit with you before making a judgment. The energy of the internet after a piece of media has dropped can also affect people's takes. If I see a lot of people hating on a thing, I'm more likely to focus on the positive aspects and vice versa. That happens no matter what my actual take was going to be. That is from Too Mellow, a Waypoint forum mod, a beloved forum mod, I think, it's safe to say, in a forum thread about, you know, sort of the idea of spoilers and sort of leaking out your hot takes and being right there, right in the moment, related to FOMO in large cultural issues on our own Waypoint forums. I, of course, am Danielle Riendo. This is Waypoint Radio, episode 121, and joining me today are Austin Walker.
That's me. That's me, Austin Walker. Sorry, I was busy. I was thinking
You're busy going 90 miles an hour down a freeway.
Shrieking out. It's just a shtick. The thing I was just thinking was, any other year, FOMO might be the word of the year. But boy, yep. 2017 would not let us have such a mundane bullshit thing. So, as our centerpiece.
That's true. Also not feeling 2017 here is Patrick Klepek.
Here's what I think about 2017 is that it's bad, but
yep.
But the weird contrast is like it's also been like probably like the best year of my life. Raising my daughter has been brought me an unmeasurable joy, but it's like, so it's always weird because like sort of like public me 2017 is fucking shit. We're all the hell in a handbasket, like it's all over. 2018 is gonna be even worse. Like private me, like I'm having a great time in 2017.
Yeah, I've been there. I mean so I was just dragging Taylor Swift on the internet like I do. because she made a fucking Twitter post that was just like, not a Twitter post, I think it was an Instagram post that was just like, 2017 has been so good, thank you all. And it was like, ugh. You know, it was a little snarky of me to be like, really, 2017 was so dope? Yeah, really? You really love 2017 so much? The point isn't like you can't have a good year when the world is on fire, but like, I literally have been writing that piece every Christmas or every like holiday season for the last 3 years, which is like the first if I go back to before I was at Giant Bomb, I wrote like an end of year wrap-up thing just on my blog about how I'd had this incredible year where like actually it was the first year that I was invited to do a guest piece at Giant Bomb, top 10 list at Giant Bomb, and I was like, wow, it's been a really cool year for me, but also it's been 2014, so it's been Gamergate, it's been Black Lives Matter, it's been, you know, the deaths of so many innocent black men, it's been, you know, people marching in the streets, and my year has been great. And then the next year was 2015, and again it was like, this year has been kind of shitty, but I got a job at Giant Bomb. I've had a really cool year. And then the next year was last year, and it was like, well, I launched a website. But the world is, but Donald Trump just got elected. And so again, like, it's such a weird balance of, like, you need to, I'm totally, like, you have a good year, you have a good year, you love the people you're around, you love the work you've been able to do. But I'm a big believer in, like, it being a sign of empathy and goodness that you're able to contextualize your good year in the broader year that the rest of the world has had, especially the rest of the world in your space. Do you know what I mean? Like,
oh yeah,
I don't know. It's one of those.
Yeah, that's definitely true. Until October, I was definitely having one of the best years of my life. Then October happened.
Yeah,
and it's been awful since then, but like, hey, at least some of the worst parts of that are beginning to clear up a little. So mm-hmm. That's, you know, I don't know, totally. Whatever. I'm trying totally. To be positive, I suppose. But I guess in the honor of what our topic is today, in the honor of Tumelo, again, beloved forum mod Tumelo, I also saw Star Wars last night, and I sort of immediately... I tried to be less me about it for once in my life. I only tweeted, like, I'm about to see Star Wars. And then I saw Star Wars,
uh-huh.
The Last Jedi, at opening night in Union Square. It tends to be a fun time. I've done this for the last 3 years now. And then I just tweeted, like, I saw the Star Wars. I liked it. You know, I tried to keep it light. I did an mm-hmm. open thread this morning that was pretty spoiler-free. Just about my thoughts about the movie, which I will not go into because that's not the point today. The point today is talking about this phenomenon, not just how I felt about a thing. But I just want to say that to start out because I feel this a lot. And I think we all do, especially as, you know, entertainment journalists who watch something or play something. And there is a pressure, I think, ingrained in us from, you know, writing about games to be first or to be quick, to be, you know, within the movement sounds a little weird, I guess. But, you know, you want to be there. You want to be there to experience the zeitgeist. You want to be there with your thoughts, with your, you know, collected thoughts out there while it's still fresh. Or even you might even want to be first sometimes. Because
why?
Sometimes
like,
that's
what
how
is,
it works.
I am curious, like, not that I've never been that way, but I'm curious for both of you, is there that like, I want to be out there immediately? And also, what is the motivating factor there?
Just as a game reviewer, I think I was always kind of taught to be like, yep, embargo, you're out there. Right. You know, like, obviously that was not where I worked previously as a game reviewer. It was not the number one concern to be first by any means, but it was definitely, if you can, you should. So I think that mentality has had something to do with it. I don't know, Patrick, do you also have this? Did you have that mentality?
I just like being part of the conversation. Like, I just like reading people's thoughts as, like, the thoughts are being developed. Like,
yeah,
it is literally, like I like to see the things that other people are talking about because I like to have conversations about things that I'm interested in. Like, that sounds, like, really basic, but, like, that is largely my motivating factor for seeing things or playing things as, like, friends or a larger society is having that conversation because, I like working through my feelings on something while other people are working through their feelings. And it's different to do that once, like, people have settled or they've started to forget things or, like,
the tape
machines have revved up. You know, I'm not gonna be able to see The Last Jedi until Tuesday because I have some family in town this weekend, and we're, you know, I can't just, like, take a Sunday afternoon and my daughter's gonna take a nap. I've got a camera on her, so we'll just look at the camera while we're at Last Jedi. I'll be fine.
Last Jedi. That's what it is.
Spoilers.
You
said
her.
No spoilers.
I'm sorry. Oh man.
Okay. And so, like, that's actually been one of the most frustrating things about being a parent. I'm like, the time that I lose being able to go see the things that I like is, like, the fear of missing out is not that I didn't see the thing, right, or play the thing. It's that I like being part of the conversation about the thing that I'm interested in.
Right.
And what's so cool about the discussion that happens these days is, like, I have that with my friends. I have that on forums. I have it on Twitter. Like, I have it in so many places. And, like, just people, by the very nature of, like, when there is distance from something, people have moved on to the next thing. Like, there are, and also, there are very few in our fragmented media culture. And the acceleration of news these days, like, the way things occur. Like, it is, there are very few moments in society these days where we all do a thing together. And like, The Last Jedi is, like, one of those things where, like, by and large, most people are going to go see that movie. And so, like, it's cool for it to be a thing that I can talk about with almost everyone and, like, work through how I feel about it. Because they're just – that's just not the case. Like, oh, I'm only 4 episodes into Stranger Things. Oh, like, I've – you know what I mean? Like, it's just everything's so fragmented in a way that is good for watching things at your own pace. Like, it is a net gain in a lot of other ways. But I like having those conversations. I'm the person that likes reading episode recaps of things and then, like, reading the forum threads about it. So that is the long version of, like, I like to watch and experience these things because I like just part of that conversation.
Right.
Yeah, it's a fun spectator sport, too. There's an aspect of this that is as fun as the – kind of what you're saying – as the media itself. But, like, treating it like a sport in some ways, like, that part is fun in its way, too.
That part can be exhausting of just, like, the take factory and the back and forth and the, like, seeing camps drawn up, which is, like, also part of what – part of what put me off sports for a little while was definitely, like, that sort of, like, oh, stop being, like – there was a point at which I stopped seeing the fun in the rivalry I got. I got why I didn't like the Dallas Cowboys. I understood that. But I didn't know why I was supposed to get so worked up about, like, the Eagles going against, let's say, the Bears, right? Which is like, yeah, like, I hope we win. I hope my team wins. But, like, I'm not here to, like, cheer. Whatever. And so some of that also comes up in social media around fandom and around, like, big events like this. And I haven't really enjoyed that part of it. Okay, here's actually the thing. I think I've said this before. I used to be really bad. Like, I used to just be an asshole who got a lot of joy in putting motherfuckers in the ground. And, like, out-arguing you and telling you why you were wrong. And winning. And winning. Yeah. And, like, I extremely got over that and became a person people wanted to be around, and figured out how to use the kind of critical muscles to do something other than winning. And it turns out I got way more joy out of that. And weirdly, I think, like, I can actually track, like, Danielle, you were saying that as a reviewer, you were always, you kind of had it instilled in you that you wanted to be out there on the day when people were talking about things. Yeah. And I definitely had a similar arc, which was, like, as a freelancer, you have no control over when your shit goes live at all. And so there were plenty of times when I was, like, submitted my article, like, can't wait for people to see this hot take I have on Watch Dogs or whatever, right? Yeah. And the answer was often they don't get to see it for 3 days, 5 days, because, you know, again, I was writing for outlets often that, like, would have only run a couple of stories a day. I was writing for Paste. I was writing for GameSpot, and so they were focusing on one review every day or something. So sorry, Austin, your Grow Home review is going to get pushed by a day. And I'm sitting there like, but mother, people have to know about Grow Home. Everyone needs to know. It came out 2 days ago. We're going to miss the window when anyone gives a fuck about Grow Home. And that was about, like, I want to win the conversation by having my take be the take. And then I you know, was actually, you know, in a full-time position at Giant Bomb. And so then it did become, like, it's not just about winning the conversation. It's about knowing that the audience will not care as much and will not, like, it's not just about clicking through. They literally won't appreciate anything as much because their attention is now in some other space, 3, 4, 5 days after something came out. Like, people who would otherwise really enjoy a piece early on won't tune in. And that was, like, the last, you know, year and a half of my life. And then now I think I found it. I think I found the right way forward for me, which is the reason I get FOMO, the reason I want to rush to see things and play things and write about things, is because I so rarely get to use those critical muscles at this point that most of my job is, like, meetings and thinking about freelance budgets and thinking about the end of year scheduling and talking about, you know, future tent poles and shit in 20. Like, Joel and I, our Waypoint's publisher, are already talking about, like, mid-year events for 2018 for Waypoint. And so one of the nice things about having something like a Star Wars come out and giving myself the time to go see it and try to think of a take is just, it gives me the energy and the room to where I'm allowing myself to have those conversations. So, Patrick, it ends up being a lot like you, which is, like, I like the process of figuring out where I'm at. And there's nothing in the world for me like sitting down to write 1,500 words, 2,000 words on something to help me figure out my feelings. And it's just, like, the thing I like the most in the world is that. So that is definitely where I'm at with Star Wars right now, but also where I was at with some major games all year, because it was such a packed year.
And it's interesting because and we were talking off in our Discord a little bit about, like, how this intersects with spoilers and stuff like that, because it, like, has, like, a direct correlation of sort of, like, mingling in here, like, what you can and can't say and what the ground rules are, especially in an era where, you know, when a show premieres on Netflix with 10 episodes, like, what does that mean you can and can't talk about?
Right, you just download all those immediately and then watch them on a night and then go on, you know, Twitter the next day and be like, I can't believe that happened. And, like, fuck off. Like, it's been 12 hours. How did you watch a 10-hour show and develop a take so quick?
And I hate that. Like, I miss, I think about some of my favorite shows. Like Lost is, I don't think it's the best show of all time, but it's my favorite show of all time. Yeah, I think those are, like, like, different things. Yeah. And if that show just, like, dumped its whole, like, season, like, it wouldn't have been as fun of a show to watch. Like, half the fun, like, a lot of the fun I derived from that show was, like, an episode comes out. Like, I go on the message boards. Everyone is, like, fucking screen capping and, like, looking through and then, like, analyzing the preview for next week. Like, part of that, the fun of that was the joy of the being deprived the ability to watch the next thing. But I guess, the thing I was thinking about with spoilers was in the last a week or two ago, I wrote about the appearance – even here, I'm not going to be explicit about it. The appearance of a character in the new Wolfenstein game. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to figure out, as soon as I played that game, that moment, I wanted to write about that moment. And I was like, well, when can I write about that? When does it make sense to write about that moment where it's, like, most effective for an audience that... because it's not just, is this game any good or not? It's like, let's talk about a specific moment late in the game that hopefully enough people at this point have experienced to be interested in reading. But even after having done that, and I felt like I waited the appropriate amount of time, it's like, well, how do I sell people on reading this now?
Right.
Because I need to write a headline that appeals to people that will know what I'm talking about without writing a headline that spoils it for people that haven't gotten there yet. And so I'm so you end up writing something, like, vague and, like, slightly hyperbolic because it's like, ah, motherfuckers, like, I can't just tell you what this thing is. Like, maybe someday in the future, like, we'll have spoiler text on everything. I'd love that. I wish I could write, like, alternative headlines that, like, here's what this story is actually about. Like, I'm not trying to write clickbait. I just can't tell you that blank comes into this game, and let's talk about blank.
Right, well, and part of the thing that's tough there is, and we're in such a weird moment, I think, because we have... cultural objects and works like Star Wars The Last Jedi are, from our perspective as people who write about stuff and talk about stuff, they will generate attention. People are interested in those stories and those takes in all of the articles you could write. There is an audience for that stuff. And I'm not even just talking about we need those clicks. Waypoint isn't like a little peek
we're
behind
not
the
click
curtain.
Factory,
we're not, a, we're know? Not like our KPIs, our metrics, the things that people are tracking for, like, did we have a good year, is not about, like, baseline clicks. Like, that's one of the things we think about, but it's not the only thing. But what I can say is, like, our audience is interested in those things. And so same thing with, like, when a big game like a Wolfenstein or a Mario comes out. A Wolfenstein or a Mario, the two genres.
the Wolfmar. Yeah, uh-huh. I got you.
And the you want to be able to tell those stories and do those deep dives. And often these things are dense enough in a good way to allow you to do that, to revisit it again and again. I think we've run four or five pieces on Wolfenstein at this point, often in conversation with each other, often in disagreement with each other about some things, and the works are dense enough to allow that. But at the same time, I think that I think there's an important place in the cultural conversation for spoiler-filled works, for essays and articles, for podcasts, for analysis that says, listen, heads up, I'm going to dive deep into that shit that happens in the third act. I'm going to talk openly about what Rosebud is in Citizen Kane so they can get at something about what's happening there. And I think that it's important for us to have a place for that 100%. And at the same time, I spent years as a super broke grad student who was gatekept by capitalism from many of these things, right? Like, from being
able to go
see
new
movies.
To be broke is to be gatekept.
It is. Yeah. It totally is. Yeah. Like, and like, from being able to play a new game, or from being able to, and at the same time, like, that was also gatekeeping from, because that's where the audiences were, and this is part of when I was a freelancer and a blogger also, was like, if I don't have that new thing, I can't advance my personal career because I can't speak on it. Like, I remember trading in 5 games so I could get BioShock Infinite so that then write about BioShock Infinite. And then, heads up, I wrote 3 essays about BioShock Infinite, not because I was like so taken by BioShock Infinite, but because I needed that $60 to turn that trade-in value to turn into something that would exist on my blog and help push Austin Walker so that people would know who the fuck I was. Like,
you were so taken.
I was taken. Oh! The Taken King. That's me.
You were infinitely taken.
Yeah, really. Exactly. So, like, that's like the whole thing is, like, I have so much sympathy for people who often say to us as people who make stuff to read and listen to and watch on the internet, like, I hate being under this deluge of takes and content about new stuff, because I'm not going to get to explore the new stuff for months. So one of the reasons why when we did the Wolfenstein 101, Waypoint 101, I wanted to be very clear that we did the first half of Wolfenstein, or the second half of our episode on Wolfenstein, The New Order, was going to be very clearly delineated from the part of it on The New Colossus, because I know there are lots of people who, like, won't be able to buy The New Colossus until it's $15 on Steam.
Yeah.
And I think that tension is really hard, but also, and this is where I want to know what y'all think, is, like, the spoiler police, they are alive.
Oh, boy.
They are out there. And,
oh, boy.
And I'm...
I hear them.
They're coming. They're coming.
They're coming. I said for us.
I said that Luke was in The Last Jedi, and now they're going to arrest me.
Oh, no! And it's like a little drone that comes in. Well, I want to ask, too, like, because personally, I've always been of two minds with spoilers. Like, I often, a spoiler will not completely impact my enjoyment. Like, I was spoiled on the thing you were talking about earlier, Patrick, about The New Colossus. And I still found that incredible, you know, that moment, that the thing that happened was still incredible, and it still really worked for me. And I know Rob and I actually have talked about this a lot on Idle Weekend at times, about, like, the nature of spoilers and the nature of what you're going to a piece of work for. Are you going there to watch the characters develop? Are you going there to watch the story sort of unwrap itself and unfurl itself and look for those little details? Or are you, you know, are you going to be really enraptured by the story itself, by the plot itself? Like, are you more plot-driven or are you more character-driven? And I think that really is, and it's not 100%, it's not a binary, it's not, you know, that's a spectrum, not a binary, of course. You can want both out of a piece of media. But I've always been of the mind that they don't matter as much, I think, to me as they do to other people, but I'm still very happy to be thoughtful about them, and thoughtful in the sense that, like, okay, there's almost like a weird consent thing there with spoilers. Like, you don't want to be spoiled, so it would be wrong for me to spoil you, that kind of thing, instead of like, oh, whatever,
right.
It doesn't matter, because it doesn't matter to me, you know?
The thing I see that, right, well, that's the thing, is, like, there is, sometimes I see that, like, the twisted version of the golden rule thing, right, which is like,
right, yeah.
No, but I don't mind being spoiled, therefore I'm not going to cover my own spoilers.
It's still really mean to do that for somebody that means something to.
It's just,
yes,
like, not that hard. That's actually what it comes down to for me with, like, being a decent person often is, there are times when being a good person is an ask, is a lift. It is hard to get out of bed and go like join the march and protest shitty stuff when it's snowy and cold out and you're at home and you have hot chocolate and, like, soup and you know, you and your partner are, like, going to stay in and watch TV or whatever. Like, that stuff is, those, it can be difficult to, it can be really hard to be really good in the face of, like, actual oppression and tyranny. And, like, if you live in a country with you know, a non-elected leader and you have to, like, literally put your life on the line to try to change conditions, or if you're working in an unsafe factory, or, like, those things are legitimately hard to do. It's not that hard to use Rot 13 to hide your spoilers on Twitter. It's not that hard to, like, it, what it takes is for us to sit in a room called hashtag headlines, and us to come up with a better headline so that we're not spoilery in the headline, but also are able to communicate it. And it's tough in the, like, technical sense, but it's not hard in the moral sense, or the like, it's not hard once you prioritize it. And so I don't know, we've been doing it, we're trying to do a good job of walking that line. Even though for me, and this is a question you asked, like, I tend not to mind spoilers at all. Yeah. Like, I tend to let myself be spoiled on a thing. Like, I haven't spoiled myself on Last Jedi because I think it fits into the realm of those, like, handful of things where I know that part of the execution is about surprise. I know that Rian Johnson is interested in surprising the audience, and so I'm curious about that aspect. But yeah, by and large, that isn't how the stories I consume work. They're about characterization. They're about a kind of execution on setting and place and tone. And so I often like even being spoiled in certain instances, so that when I go into a story like that, I'm already looking for all of those things. I'm looking for the things about, like, oh, here's how this character is. Like, I know that this twist is coming later, and look at how they're foreshadowing it here. That's really interesting. I'm, like, totally tuned in. But then when I watched Twin Peaks this year, like, I was so glad that didn't drop all at once. I was so glad, Patrick, to what you were saying, like Lost, it was week to week. I get to block out an hour of my time every week to watch whatever shit was happening on my screen. and then like, could go from that to thinking about what was going to happen next week, because for that team, like, for the crew behind that, I think that a big part of the execution was, how can we surprise people? How can we tell the story over 18 hours instead of just the characterization and stuff, which was still good on its own. But yeah, so that's my answer for you, Daniel.
I had this interesting moment with, so on stream the last yesterday and today, I finished up playing through Doki Doki Literature Club, which is a totally free visual novel that's available on Steam and some other places. You don't have to pay anything for it, which, having played it now, is fucking criminal. Just go change it to $5. It's worth it. It's fine. This game opens with content warnings about, like, the what's in the game. A lot of the conversation around the game. In my streaming and other, like, ways where you read about the game, is like, hey, like, heads up, like, this game includes, like, abuse and suicide and things like that. And let me be clear, like, I'm not disputing the merit or the usefulness of content warnings and putting things for, like, that are going to possibly trigger people. That said, the premise of this game is hinged on, like, the weird places it goes. And if you didn't know that, knowing that the game is going to have certain themes, end up undercutting some of those themes for someone that was not affected by those themes. And so I found it, like, a really interesting moment to play a game where I was like, it's worthwhile for these things to be here for people that is going to impact their ability or inability to enjoy or consume this game and this experience. At the same time, it ended up foreshadowing, like, way too much about the game in a way that was like, and this comes from someone like myself who, I'm, like, not super sensitive to spoilers, but I avoid them almost at all costs because I prefer to just have as pure an experience as I can. It's just, like, it's the way I like to just experience pretty much all media that I come into contact with. So I found, like, this really interesting moment with this game in particular where, like, those moments that it's warning you about are not necessarily the entire arc of the game. Like, it goes to other places that are separated from you about. But it was an interesting moment where, like, the content warning itself, because those moments that it's talking about don't happen until much later. And it's an otherwise sort of, like, banal visual novel for a long time before it starts going to some different places. It was just interesting. Like, I don't know if I have, like, definitive feelings on it one way or the other, but it was a fascinating version of, like, a tangent of the conversation we're talking about.
It's actually putting it into practice in certain ways that is very interesting. Like, it's putting the actual, like, care of people over the spoiler police in practice, which is kind of cool in a way, I think. But, yeah, I think, you know, I haven't played, like, it yet, so.
I think it's, know. Like, you know, for me, it's interesting because there's lots of conversation around content warnings in the world right now. There's lots of New York Times editorials about how precious millennials are about content warnings and their safe spaces, how precious college students across the country are, and how they don't want to be about how it's about avoiding difficult content. But as someone who taught students and who often had to give content warnings for material, that stuff often helps when you are being. It depends on like what you're trying to use the work, how you're trying to approach the work, and like for me, knowing that that stuff is there helps me enter it with the right mindset. Not only because like I want to criticize or analyze something, and I want to like, okay, this game has you know a content warning for suicide. That means I want to start thinking about mental health and about depression and about ideation and stuff like that. But also, simply because it means, hey, am I in the mood right now? Can I actually devote? Is this hour the right hour for me to play through this game or read this book or watch this show where I'm going to be able to process it and like have those bad feelings? It can be even better for me when I know I'm entering it in the right mood, in the right mode, in the right like zone, like because otherwise what can happen is something can fall flat for me because I'm like not in a place where I'm ready to be emotionally open or vulnerable, and instead if I don't see something coming, it can feel like it was just trying to shock me or something, instead of like, oh, this is actually digging into something in a way that I didn't anticipate it being able to do well. It doesn't always work out that way, but sometimes it does.
Yeah, I have a couple of thoughts on this, but I think we should probably take a quick ad break, and then we'll be back.
Sounds good.
Just a moment.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Okay, we're back. Hopefully that actually played the ad.
We'll see.
You know, sometimes you roll the dice when you get to your ads and your podcasts. Sometimes you just roll the dice a little
bit. It's true.
That's fine. Go ahead.
No, I was actually going to go to a whole new topic, but I'll do that after. If you have more thoughts on the content warning side of things, we can do that.
Well, generally, I really am of several minds to it. One thing specifically that I was thinking about recently, and it goes right to your point about sort of being prepared for certain things.
Mm-hmm.
The Wolfenstein intro really kind of got to me. It kind of shocked me a little
right.
bit, and it did not have any sort of content warnings. And I remember Mafia 3 did. It started out with like, oh, this is a historical depiction. There are racial slurs, blah mm-hmm. blah, and it kind of, you know, got you into a certain place to think about certain things and be prepared for certain things, which I think is useful. And I'm thinking about games that did not use this sort of content warning, even though it may have. You can make a case for doing the content warning, and you can also make a case for. You can make a case. I'm not going to make that case because I actually think that caring for people is much more important than shock. But you could make the case for going there and being shocking, which I think Wolfenstein did. And actually is one of the few cases in life that pulls it off decently because of kind of the point of the game and the way that all works. Obviously, we've talked to Wolfenstein to death, but
yeah.
Just thinking about that, there's also a game called Diaries of a Spaceport Janitor.
Love that game. Those are my top 10.
I love that
year.
Game too.
Yep.
And I remember actually interviewing the devs at one point at a previous job about whether they considered putting a content warning in for gender dysphoria, because a big part of that
yeah.
game is actually running out of the drug that's in your system that that you need to be the right gender. Basically,
but you're like an alien race that like
yeah.
that switches.
You have to
between
shift every shifts, few days.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah,
and so you shift basically. Genders of like. A dozen or something, and yeah, like that sneaks up on you the first time. You're like, whoa, everything is wrong. I'm moving weird. The world looks weird.
Everything's blurry.
I should play
motion
that game
blurred.
Again. That yeah. game made me happy in a way I haven't been in 2017. So I should.
Well,
that
game is fantastic.
Yeah. Anyway, but yeah, so what did they say when you asked them about that?
I think they were kind of like, yeah, actually, we, you know, almost my bad. I mean, but not 100%, because they also did want it to be something like, no, it's just a fact of the world. You're not going to get mm-hmm. sort of warned on it, that sort of thing. But they were definitely also because a lot of the folks who worked on that are you know, people who are all over sort of the gender spectrum,
right?
And they were like, no, we don't want to hurt people, like we don't want to cause right. harm with our game.
I should know? Note so the Steam page does now have mild content warning for gender dysphoria, catcalling, yes. poverty, and drug use.
So they did end up putting that in. So that's
yeah,
that's cool. Like not the drug use part, like whatever, but for gender dysphoria,
right?
Feel more, yeah.
You know, I don't think for me it's like, yeah, like put the content warning on there. I'm already used to seeing content warnings on everything. Like TV shows open with content warnings often. Movies have ratings. I mean, like even games, even if it's not like on most games that release on all games that release on consoles have gone through ESRB, and like I know what's going to be in a game because someone on Twitter will have shared the ESRB's weird paragraph about that game because will have some funny shit in it. So like I don't know. I'm at the place where for those like I they don't get in the way of what I think of as the sort of conversation that that the sort of spoiler phobia or whatever would get in the right. way of. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I agree.
No one's ever like, you can't talk about the gender dysphoria in Dyer's or Spaceport Janitor because there was like the content warning wasn't there or something like that. You know what I mean? So I think it's a little bit different. Whereas people will say, don't talk about that because it's a spoiler. It's like, okay, like,
And there's also the effect of this, and this is also how I feel about spoilers. And sorry to keep going back to a sports metaphor, but I had a conversation once with like my sister's boyfriend about really appreciating. I love watching old games and old fights and old, you know, like things from the 80s. I love watching like old Tyson
ESPN
fights.
ESPN Classic just stuck on your TV right now.
Oh my God, I would watch that all day every day.
My dad should hang out because his whole like he has like a basement that is like a converted basement with a big TV and stuff, and his whole wall is like DVDs and videotapes, and a lot of those videotapes are just old fights that have been taped off of HBO or Showtime. Like,
can we hang out? Can I go to your house for Christmas?
Listen, my dad has said that Danielle is a superstar a billion times to me. So, yes, I think you would actually really enjoy watching old fights with my dad.
I would seriously love that. And I love that because of what I'm going to it for, right? I want to see that technique. I want to see that strategy. I want to see these beautiful moves that people make. Even like old basketball games. I watch like old, you know, 80s Celtics games or 90s Bulls games. And I'm just like, oh my God, look at, you know, this execution here. It's beautiful. I'm trying to understand the game and this is the best way to do it, I feel like. And I had this conversation with my sister's boyfriend, who's just like, why would you ever do that? You know who won. And I'm just like, ugh.
Well, that's not why you're watching it.
It's not why I'm watching, man. And I understand. You are also, when you're watching something in the moment, you are watching to see who wins. You are watching to watch something unfold in real time. And I get that too. I get the excitement of it. But there's something to be said for appreciating the execution of things on any level or
separate
appreciating the craft of something separate
info.
From the plot itself or the cultural event of it sort of unfolding before you in real time.
Well, that actually goes to something I was going to ask when we came right back from the break.
Oh, yes, sorry.
you said that it would be a roll of the dice if the ads if the ad played. And that made me think about rolling dice and dice rolls and this larger thing that actually comes up sometimes when we talk about spoilers in games, which is I think every 8 months I see on a forum somewhere someone make the case that like, oh, you can't spoil a game because the gameplay is the thing that is the actual thing that would be spoiled. That like, you can't really spoil Dark Souls because the reason I'm coming to Dark Souls is how it feels to swing a two-handed sword. And that's not spoilable through a review. And I'm not agreeing with that take, but I think that it's interesting, especially when we think about games and especially when we think about something like as there are more and more games with lots of procedural generation, with lots of emergent storytelling, emergent narrative stuff, things like playing even something like XCOM, where a lot of the story is what you add to it or what you bring to it, and you go, oh no, my soldier, Adam. I was going to say Adam Boys. Okay. When Adam Boys, my favorite XCOM soldier, gets shot down by the alien Chosen, like, that's an important moment to me in my story. And so, like, that couldn't be spoiled for me in some way. And I'm curious if you think games have a different relationship with spoilers because of the ways in which they generate narrative through play. And not all games, but games could do that in some ways.
Yeah, it depends on the game, certainly. I know that's like a pat answer, but yes, I think there is a very major qualitative difference between a game that has much more procedural elements and a game that, there's a big difference between Spelunky and Uncharted, right? even though mm-hmm. purportedly, thematically, they are similar in some ways. Like, what happens in an Uncharted game is a much more directed experience. It's a much more authored experience, I suppose, right, than what right. happens in your average, you know, session with Spelunky. I'm not, like, an expert in either of those games, like, to be clear, I'm just saying sure. it's very, very different.
But I guess one of my questions is something like, let's talk about Uncharted 2, because it came out a long time ago.
Sure.
There's a train sequence in Uncharted 2. I think that I could have that train sequence described to me beat for beat, and it still probably would have been an effective moment of spectacle.
Yes.
And I don't know that that's... I'm curious if that would be true for me if Uncharted 2 had been a book and there had been a thrilling train sequence in that book, or if it had been a Michael Bay blockbuster. I mean, maybe it would be. Maybe that's just like the nature of
high spectacle. I see what you're saying. The experience itself. The and feeling like maybe, of being on the ride as opposed
right,
to what
right,
happens.
Right,
yes,
like,
yes.
Or maybe what this is actually making me recognize, or not making me recognize, but this is another point on the evidence pile, that there is like a severe lack of diversity in game storytelling in terms of what games tell stories about. Like, game stories are often about train hijinks and chases and helicopters showing up and rocket launchers, and not so often about, you know, tragic betrayals of a very deep personal nature, or, you know, an exploration of a character's life over a dozen years where, like, oh, then this happens in their life and it changes the thing, you know, whatever. That stuff doesn't happen that often in games in comparison to, or at least in big budget AAA games that we talk about the way we talk about Wolfenstein. What we talk about when we talk about Wolfenstein, by the way, this is my new book. Maybe that is actually part of the problem there. It's like, I don't think that you can spoil some of the big moments in a big action game when that action game isn't Wolfenstein, where the big moments are just happening in cutscenes. Do you know what I mean? Like,
right, an actual moment of gameplay rather than an interactive cutscene. Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Or maybe that's not true, because now that I think about it, I think about there are things that happen at the start of Dark Souls 2 with enemies showing up that are like, yo, I can't believe that happened. And I had one of those early moments spoiled for me. Patrick, do you remember the name of that fucking Dark Souls 2 boss? It had wings. I'm not going to say what happens with it because I don't want to spoil it. But there's an early Dark Souls 2 boss with wings. Dark Souls 2 boss with wings. I want to say, like, it's
it
not the
like
ruined
a
Sentinels.
Feminine product right there. I'm sorry.
But whatever. Like, there's a Dark Souls 2 boss fairly early on. That you could have an encounter with that was, like, just very surprising. And it's really cool. And, like, so maybe even in a game like Dark Souls, those scripted moments do end up counting, like, as spoilers, even though it's not, like, the feel of having that fight. Anyway, that's where I'm at on Dark Souls spoilers. Souls spoilers in 2017.
When did 2 come out? What is the year? That, I guess that's another fun question to think about.
Yeah, sure.
Like, how long and how much, and of course this is never going to be like one answer, but how long and how much do you actually give weight to, oh, okay, it's been a year versus it's been 5 years versus, well, it's, oh, people have actually rediscovered something and then there was sort of a second wave about something, you know,
right.
there's a whole
a
bunch
re-release,
there.
A re-release,
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, at what point is there a difference where, like, you can write in the headline the spoiler, or, like,
right.
write the tweet that's, like, just outright
right.
the spoiler? Yeah, I don't know. There is no line, right? Like, I mean, that's the tough part is there isn't, you know? I mean,
right.
yeah.
I don't know. I guess I just generally avoid that stuff and, you know,
because
it's,
well,
easy,
like,
to avoid, right?
Yeah.
It's, like, easy to just, like, hey, I've got thoughts on, I don't know. I policing what's actually in an article that lets you, like, know up front, like, hey, you're gonna talk about spoilers, like, at that point, like, the, you know, the gloves are off and it, you know, you're shredding on your own territory. But,
and yet I saw people do that today, Patrick. I saw somebody respond to a piece about The Last Jedi today where, like, the second line in it was, there are going to be spoilers in this piece.
Oh,
and,
my God.
And, like, five of the responses to the tweet that linked out that piece, the tweet had no spoilers, the headline had no spoilers, but the a lot of the responses were like, I can't believe you're spoiling this movie already. And it's like,
good
don't
Lord.
Read further than where it says literally in bold, warning, there are spoilers in this piece.
Well, close Twitter till you see the movie. Like, it's really not, like, it's not that tough. It really isn't that tough. Unless Twitter is your job, then
but again, like,
walk away.
Yeah.
But also just, like, heed the fucking warning. Like,
heed the warning.
It's okay to not read this one piece. Like, bro.
Though, is this now the other thing, which is like, are we now falling into the trap that Mello over on the forum said, which is like, we're defending the need to get out there and make takes very quickly. The thing that I saw, I believe, if I'm remembering right, was not even a proper take. It was just like, oh, here's a thing. Here is an element of this story. I want to say it was a Chris Plant piece at Polygon. So, but it was like, here's a thing in the Star Wars, it was Star Wars The Last Jedi fixes one of the prequel's worst problems. That's what the headline is. And then, seriously, already an article with spoilers. That's not cool. Why don't you wait to publish these kind of articles? And it's like, there's not... The second line is that there are going to be... there are going to be spoilers. And that's when I can close the thing.
Yeah, there you go.
Sorry, I don't mean to drag random people on Twitter, but here we are.
Well, sometimes, you know, sometimes... Twitter rando's got to be dragged. I do want to address one other part that I think is in the spirit of Tumello's post here, which is also the sort of just the fact that a lot of hot takes can be pretty shallow, and they can be adding to the exhaustion, and they can be adding to a sort of existential crisis. Maybe I'm also adding editorializing here a little bit, but adding to the existential crisis in which we all get incredibly upset about, for example, I don't know, the discourse around the Porgs or whatever. I don't even know what it is this time. But, you know, like, let's call it Ewok discourse.
I thought you said the discourse around the Porgs, and I thought, like, whoa, we're going to get into this tax plan? What's happening?
No. Porg with a G at the end.
Those are little animals, right? They're little.
They're in the trailer. I'm sorry. I guess, whatever.
You're spoiling Ewoks, the Porgs.
The Ewok discourse, okay? The Ewok. Let's call them Ewoks. Whatever.
Sure.
It's fine. This is something that really does resonate with me, is that feeling of in the rush to write your hot take, or in the rush to make sure your opinion is out there, that you, like, I don't know, lose the spirit of the actual work, or lose so many pieces of it, or lose so many parts of it. What Tumello wrote about, especially at the very end here, of if you see a lot of people hating on a thing, they're more likely to focus on the positive aspects, or vice versa. I do that too. I definitely feel that. I definitely feel that sort of tension between, like, well, okay, that's what this person thought, but they're an idiot. You know, that clear, like, weird, that weird feeling of, like, no, you saw this, but I saw that.
Speaks
to me, man.
There are moments, there have been times when I've gotten, like, exhausted by it, for sure.
Yes.
But I think I may just have a high tolerance for it comparatively, which is that, like everything else online, it's terrible, and it's exhausting and dispiriting. But I live online because I don't know how not to. And so Twitter is my terrible home, but it's my home. So I think to some degree, like, I think that that's a totally fine point to bring up for both you and Mello. But, like, it is for whatever reason, I don't know. I'm trying to work out why it is.
I need some of your Zen, Austin. I need some of that Zen.
At the end of the day, like, I've gotten very Zen over the years. Not Zen, but, like, I've gotten very calm about other people's takes over the years, except for when they're really bad. Except for when someone says that games are better without stories. Except for Taylor Smith, and then, like, every once in a while.
Sorry, not Smith.
Taylor's who?
What did she say?
Taylor Smith? Who is Taylor? I'm looking up Taylor Smith.
Taylor Smith.
Taylor
Smith. Oh, you know what, guys? You know what? No. She's right. Because the old Taylor is dead. The new Taylor's name is actually Taylor Smith. So.
That's right.
Like, what?
Taylor Nicole Smith is an American soccer player who plays as a defender for the North Carolina Courage in the National Women's Soccer League and the United States Women's National Soccer Team.
Uh-huh.
That's a good soccer
name. I didn't know
name.
You were so into women's soccer.
Not
I
my
know.
Defender. That's what I'm saying,
not
Taylor
my
Smith.
Defender.
You know, not going to be on my U.S. national team.
Oh, boy.
I think she
not
actually
not your courage.
Be. Not
right
my
there.
Exactly. Hashtag
no.
Not my courage. Not my Taylor. Yeah, I think, like, part of my chill around this stuff is old age.
I'm older than you.
Yeah. But it's like, it's emotional old age, like, okay. Not emotional old age. It makes me sound like I'm saying that you're a child, which is not what the fuck I'm saying.
Thanks a lot.
Fuck, god damn it.
Taylor Smith.
I lost all my chill.
It's okay.
No, it's like, seeing those fights at this point, okay, here's the thing I do a lot now. Someone gets in my mentions and is like, I think this just happened today with someone who was like, I think you're being mean to Taylor Swift. That literally happened today. and my response was, okay. Like, I'm not, that's not a worthy exchange. There's nothing I can do in that exchange to elaborate. I've already elaborated in a couple of other instances of how I feel here, here, and here. I go like, oh, did you read the other things I've said? They go, yeah, I still think you're mean. And I go, okay.
Like, oh, I just, you faved an exchange I had like
yes,
that this morning.
Yes, totally.
Where, I think I wrote something more or less saying like, I know it's the end of the year, but more people need to play Doki Doki Literature Club because I think it would probably surprise a lot of people. And anyway, like one of the first responses was like, overrated! Like, in exclamation marks, it was just like, yeah, that game, Lord. Actually, like, that game sucks. And like, my response was just, okay.
Okay. It's okay.
Because like, what do you want me to? Right. What do you like? You know, if you wanted to respond and say, "I found this part didn't work for me," is like,
cool, totally.
Man,
you
can talk about
have that conversation.
But like,
yes.
Overrated. It's like, shut the fuck up, man.
Just like there's not, there's no there, there. There's no exchange. Like,
what
I
does that
about...
mean? Overrated. Like, what is that? Like, that's not a that doesn't mean anything.
Not right.
Overrated to who? I didn't even hear about this game.
And also, if it
until
is
like 4 days ago.
And also, if it is overrated, that doesn't change your experience with it. Do you know what I mean,
right.
Patrick? Whereas, like, if someone wanted to come to you
the
and
Metacritic
say,
analysis does not take away from your own personal experience. Like,
right.
the meta conversation is one thing, or like the whatever the consensus becomes is not. That doesn't mean that you're not allowed to deviate from the consensus.
Right.
Just like you write about Sonic Forces, right? People who like that game genuinely and enjoyed it and like that's
right.
Their
Look,
experience.
I
go with God. Like please.
I tried to understand them. I never said that I agreed with their conclusions.
Yeah, no, you don't have to agree. Like,
like that was the real talk.
That's
that was
the
like,
point of that whole thing though was like, yeah, they
right.
they can be wrong in your opinion. That's also cool.
But like the misstep there, Patrick, for you, the reason you wrote that piece was that like people criticized that you had the overrated like response to that game publicly at first, which not that it was overrated, but you were like, mm-hmm. anybody who sees I don't understand how anyone could ever like this thing, basically.
Yeah.
And then the correct step to take, and like the version of the comment that I love to hear, the conversation I love to get into, is when someone says like, oh, here is the thing, here's the material specific thing that I feel about this, that here's what I'm bringing to this conversation, here is like the analysis that I have, here is an explanation of my just pure emotional understanding of this thing that you might not have access to. And sometimes people do disagree with me and say, here is why I feel this way, but like though to get to that second step, like to for me to want to engage, like I it has to feel like an actual good faith exchange, and not just there aren't enough hours in the day for me to re-walk through and relitigate every opinion I have. And I real talk, this then connects back to the spoiler conversation for me, which is I love it when a piece is willing to dig into spoilers.
Oh,
the spoiler police are coming for me. They're coming for me.
It.
I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said Porg.
I meant Borg.
Star Trek, not Star Wars. Are there any Borg bad internet memes yet?
Oh, there are now.
Because I bet
he
you they
it.
Exist and they're real corny. Don't do it. Don't do
he
it.
Said it.
But yeah, so I think that like part of it for me is I know a piece. God,
they're
this
coming
is so
for you, Austin.
What is happening?
They're coming for you.
I don't understand.
I want a car. When you honk the horn, it's just spoilers for different
oh
things.
Oh my god! Yeah.
So it doesn't say spoiler. It says spoiler.
It says like Vader is, and then
yeah.
like, whatever. I don't know. Who could say?
Fake spoiler. Not even real spoilers.
Hashtag fake Pork. Spoilers. Thank Patrick.
Can you that see that's you know the mean thing that people used like to do in the past. Like the these days people go into your mentions
yeah,
and
yeah,
say
yeah.
a spoiler. Back in the day, people had to earn that.
Yeah.
When Harry Potter books were coming out,
uh-huh.
and people were standing in line.
Say
they
to
would,
your face.
They would say, yeah, they would go. There was a famous, I'm sure it's on YouTube, a video of people spoiling a part of, I don't even remember what it was. Someone dies
someone
in Harry
dies.
Potter, and then they just went up and down the line with a blowhorn and just say who dies. It's so cruel. Extremely funny. very bad.
But you're putting your skin on the line. You're putting your skin on the line. Someone's going to get out of line and just drop out of you. And you know what? Good. You know, like...
Good. You deserve it. There is a really interesting case.
At least smack that blowhorn away. At least smack that bullhorn away and say, no, don't do that shit.
And do it with your wand, because you're in line at Harry Potter. You've got a wand and you know it. You can smack them with that wand.
Yes.
There is a really interesting case. I don't want to get too far off here, but it really made me think of this, and it's fascinating to me, of using, like, weaponized spoilers as a form of protest. Now, let me set this up for you.
We're going to do some work here. Walk me through
it. Yeah, we're going to do a little bit of work. This is the early 90s. This is, the movie with Catherine Tremell. The famous movie where she uncrosses her legs and people thought they saw something. God.
Oh, was that Michael Douglas? Basic Instinct.
This happened with queer people in San Francisco. They protested Basic Instinct because there is a... I'm not going to go into the machinations of it. It's basically a sexy thriller where a lot of horribly, like, ridiculous stuff happens. There's a lot of things you would put a content warning on now, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But it is, like, a very early 90s Paul Verhoeven movie. And... They were protesting it because there's a lot of things that were very, very common in sort of anything with queer characters at the time in mainstream movies. There was a lot of fridging, there was a lot of, you know, killing, there was a lot of the psychotic lesbian, there was all sorts of stuff that, you know, I don't need to go too far into it, but basically it was very stereotypical and considered, like, pretty offensive by a lot of folks in sort of the LGBT activist community at the time in the place. So they actually spoiled the movie. They would make signs that were spoiling the movie. And, like, run out into, like, you know, really visible places in the city of San Francisco. And they got actually a lot of news coverage over this and sort of got their message out there about, like, oh, this is shitty. I actually sort of love this movie. I'm not going to lie. It's one of the best guilty pleasures, I think, in all of cinematic history. So I'm not going to take a side here. But I do think that is a very interesting use of this. And it was pre-internet. So this isn't, like, just a weird trolley thing that's happened in the last couple of years where I think some of what Tumel is talking about, some of what we've been talking about all day, is very internet-enabled in certain ways. But I guess what I mean here is, like, the spirit of this sort of thing has been around for a lot longer than maybe I was really thinking about when I was sort of prepping for this show.
I feel like someone once talked to me about the notion of spoilers in, like, the age of Shakespeare, and I cannot remember how it went, but I know that there is at least one person listening right now who is a Shakespeare scholar, who is, like, just vibrating and be like, they know that I'm going to get this wrong. But that there was less of a notion of there being spoilers in those works specifically, or of knowing the plot being a spoiler, for various reasons that I would just be pulling out of my ass completely if I said it. But I'm actually curious about historically, and if you are an expert in this field or in ancient Chinese theater or in any sort of historical, cultural, or artistic pursuits, like, I am curious, throughout history, what was the notion of the spoiler, and like, how protected were those things? And yeah, are there any other cases of people using that sort of knowledge as a bludgeoning
point of
weapon?
Protest.
Yeah, in totally. Or in other ways, right? Like, is knowledge of certain works, can it be weaponized? Could it have been weaponized in ways that are, like, completely different? Like, in ways that, like, oh yeah, I know how this thing goes, so I can pretend to be an oracle, or I know how, or can pretend to be. I mean, we definitely know that there's like a history of knowing basic chemical I keep wanting to say alchemical, but that's also wrong.
Do you mean medical?
Basic medical, but there's another word that I'm looking for that I'm not finding, for like herbs and I must say tinctures.
Like botany.
Yeah, understanding botany in a way.
I'm pharmacology.
Pharmacology. That is what I was looking for. I was looking for pharmacology. In a way that, like, oh, wow, like, I'm going to be the important person in this place because I fucking know how these herbs can work to help someone on the mend or whatever. And I'm curious if there's anything like that with fiction historically also, or history even. Like, let us know. Send us an email. gaming@vice.com.
Yeah, I really want to hear from those folks for sure.
You know, an interesting sort of like cultural conversation about spoilers that happened in the last couple of years is like over Hamilton, which is like there was people had very strong feelings over whether you should listen to and get obsessed with the soundtrack before you saw the play, and or if you should like see the play and then get obsessed with the soundtrack. And like I remember asking this before I saw Hamilton in Chicago earlier this year. It was like, man, the amount of comments I got replied to that were in equal measure to what kind of vacuums do people prefer. Like, equal number of just like, wow, man, I post a picture of my kids, and I just get some likes and no comments. Like, fucking ask about like whether you should listen to the Hamilton soundtrack before you see it. Fucking 72 responses of people drawing lines. I ended up being one of the people that said, I'm going to see the I was originally going to see the play and then listen to the soundtrack, and then in the what I ended up compromising personally was I'll listen to it the week of, because I didn't want to get tired of it. Was like, I guess I didn't want to exhaust my enjoyment of the music before I saw the actual performance. So I like, but I also wanted to like not have to spend most of the time like trying to understand what they were saying if for some reason I was having trouble keeping up. It's like I didn't want to lose the plot because I was focused so much on trying to decipher the performance. That's where I ended up falling on that. But man, people have fucking opinions about what to do in that situation.
I bet. Thing I just remembered, of course, is that Romeo and Juliet spoils Romeo and Juliet, so that maybe that's what I was thinking of.
Oh.
Like, the prologue at the very beginning is like, it's like, here's the plot. There are two households. They're very similar.
It's a trailer. Star-crossed lovers. Too much.
Yeah. Exactly. It's like, and then they're gonna die, and it's sad, right? And that is literally in that I almost said movie, in that play. So maybe I was just thinking about that.
Yeah, there was a 1996 great Romeo and Juliet.
I like that movie a whole bunch.
It's real good. That soundtrack.
That soundtrack is very good.
So good.
Those guns said dagger and sword on them.
They sure did.
The fashion was incredible. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
The Mercutio, you know what? I'm not going to spoil it. But you know what? I'm going to hashtag a plague on both your houses. Hashtag a plague on both your houses. That's all I'm going to say.
Excellent. I would go to questions, but we're hitting an hour here. What do we think?
Well, yeah, I think we should wrap it up.
I think we're
good.
We have a lot of
right.
end of the year work to do still. A lot of writing and reading and playing through junk. So
yeah, we got a lot of junk to play through. So in that case, I think we'll end it off with, of course, the usual shout outs to Bowen letting us use his track "Miss You" off the EP Pale Machine. And the fact that you can find us, of course, on Twitter at Waypoint, on Facebook at Waypoint Vice, on YouTube where our videos actually go up now at Waypoint Vice. And everything that we work on at waypoint.vice.com. Austin, where can we find you online?
You can find me on Twitter at Austin_Walker.
Excellent. Patrick, where can we find you and respond to you with very strong opinions about vacuums and such on Twitter?
Well, I already bought it, but maybe when that vacuum breaks, you can find me at Patrick Griffin.
Is it working out so far? Is the vacuum, the robot vacuum?
Oh, my robot vacuum? Yeah. Oh, it's wonderful. It's beautiful. EcoVac D80, I think, is the one all that right. I got. It was a very reasonable price compared to other ones, and man, that robot picks up some dust.
I'm gonna talk to you off mic because I'm thinking about getting my parents one for Christmas. So I'm gonna need to hear some thoughts.
Robot talk.
All right.
Robot vacuum talk. Awesome. You can find me. I said awesome, not Austin. Sorry, my accent.
I'd say. Yeah.
You can find me at Danielle R.I. Thank you so much for listening. We always appreciate you giving us your ears for a little bit of your time. And as always, I'd like to say, be good and be good at it.
Peace.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.